So as I was looking at the lectionary text for this week, I realized, of course, that we have a very familiar story in the parable of the prodigal son, or whatever you want to call it, the lost son, the forgiving father. There's all kinds of names for it. And it's one of these stories in the Bible that has even made its way into the rest of culture. People who wouldn't identify themselves as religious people at all, or at least familiar with the broad strokes of this picture. And so, as I was thinking about where to go this week, I thought, well, we do need to spend some time in this story. And so we end up with the sermon title of What Child Are We? Just to make sure that nobody thinks they get off just because they're not a son and never have been one. Even though, of course, the story is about sons, I just wanted to make sure that we all understood we were well and truly embraced by this story. And it is about two sons. There are different kinds of sons, at least as we see. One is, well, could be best described, I suppose, as a wastrel, to use a good old-fashioned word. Someone who takes whatever he's got and spends it as soon as he has it, maybe even before. And the other is a sanctimonious whatnot that is usually the focus of this story. And I think that makes sense. As church people, we are more likely to see ourselves perhaps in the older son, in this ability that we have to look down on people who have made different choices than us, and often for good reasons we look down on them. The choices they've made are appalling choices. Well, I look at this story, and I find that for myself, I have changed in some ways where I see myself best in it. I've never been, as you have been here for a long time, I've never been particularly reticent about talking about what I was like when I was younger, and it was no prize. Let's just leave it at that, I suppose. I had many benefits. I grew up in a godly home. My parents went to church every Sunday because that's who they were, not because it was some kind of a social obligation. My dad was about as resistant to social obligations as you can possibly get, and that was not why. He went to church because that's where he wanted to be on Sundays, with God's people. Same with my mother. I went to church as well. Sometimes I was forced to go to church, but I was at church myself. I grew up in that environment. But as I've also told you in the past, I didn't have anything even remotely resembling an authentic or a meaningful faith in God. I just went to church because, well, that's just what I needed to do. And at a particular stage, while I never went to my parents and said, give me all that I'm going to get from you at some point, I certainly lived a life that was not particularly of value. And the picture of the father running to this child who had come to their senses was the one that I resonated with most strongly for a very long time. I find now, if I'm going to pick myself as one of the characters in this story, the one I resonate with more now is the older son. And by the way, that's one of the things about parables, is that they often provide a frame, if you will, for us to put ourselves in. The correspondence isn't one-to-one. It's not an exact picture of who we are, but it's an opportunity for us to step into these stories and see where we fit, and often we fit quite well. In this case, I fit in both. These days, at this stage of my spiritual life, well, now that I have one, I can find myself looking at some of these people who have wasted what they had and look down on them. At least a little bit. It's tempting for us to pick which son we are most like and say, that one's me, but really they're both me. We have aspects of both of these sons, and we have them probably throughout our lives. I spoke about that heritage I had growing up in the church and that, and while I never insisted that my parents give me their inheritance so I could go and waste it in whatever way seemed best to me at the time, I certainly wasted that inheritance I received for many years as someone who had been raised in the church. I look at the waste that I did as having these almost endless opportunities to make use of what I had learned in Sunday school, of what I'd learned in watching my parents and their friends and even my own friends who did have that relationship with God through Jesus. I wasted all of those opportunities I had because I just didn't think they were important. I didn't really believe it. But I came back. And when I came back, I had a very strong sense of being welcomed by God. So at that stage of my life, this notion of God running to me was a very rich one. And I still appreciate it a lot. I still think it's a wonderful picture, particularly when we put it in the context of the time where fathers didn't run to children. Children ran to fathers. If there was any running involved, it was the children. This is a very countercultural image of a father who is leaving his socially constructed dignity behind as he runs towards a son who rejected him. Because the rejection is very definitely there. The son didn't just take his money and leave. He took his money and all of his stuff and left. You don't do that if you're planning on coming back. And you can make the case that the insult that the younger son gave to his father was that he actually kind of wished he was dead so he could get his inheritance now. And so for the father to run to him where other people could see is a profound demonstration of love. Because he could have waited to welcome him, and he would have been welcomed, but he ran to him. You then have the picture of the son saying, "I'm not worthy to be your son. I should just be one of your hired hands," and all that. And you'll notice that the father never really responds to that because it's irrelevant. He says, "This is what we're going to do," and then they go and do it. The party ensues. The older son comes home. And that's where I find it in some ways easiest to see myself today. As this older son looking at this wasting wretch that he won't even refer to as his brother. He talks to his father and says, "Your son who did all these things." And stands in judgment upon him and on his father. Because he does judge his father when he says, "Look, you're doing for this excuse of a son of yours what you never did for me. You have been unfair." And it's easy for us to look at the world and see it as unfair. One of the things that's fascinating, and I'm going to be curious to see when Eli and Sam develop it in this next generation, is how our children have an innate sense of what is fair. They don't always get it right, which they're, at least I am quite certain, at least once, when my children have told me I'm not being fair, I was in fact being fair. But we have this innate sense of what is fair. And the son is telling his father, "You're not being fair. You're being unkind. You're being wrong in what you do." And it's easy for us to see us there and to look at this older son and say we shouldn't be like that, and that's a bad way to respond to this grace that God is giving to somebody who perhaps doesn't deserve it, but that's what grace is all about. And that's a true interpretation of that part of the story. But let's not lose sight of the fact that the father went to the older son too. Remember? Fathers didn't go to children. Children came to fathers. If your son is sulking outside because he's put out because somebody got a calf and he never even got a goat, you send a servant out and say, "Get in here." But this father didn't. This father went to the older son. The older son in this picture no more deserved the father to come to him than the wasteful son did. You see the similarities at the same time as we see the dramatic differences between the two? The younger son wasted what he had, and even wasted things that he shouldn't have had at that period of his life. And yet, the father went to him. The older son, where we often place ourselves, where I've heard more sermons than I care to remember about how we are the older son when we don't look to new people in the faith or whatever else it might be with compassion and an understanding. And those are all true if they fit us. But the father still came to the older son. The father still comes to us. Sometimes we think, if we had the experience of coming to faith at an older age, if we're not some who, not one of those people who, there's never been a time you didn't know that you were connected with God. And that's a wonderful thing. I wish I had that, but I don't. There's a time when I was, a long time, when I was quite convinced that I had no connection with God. I worked really hard at trying to convince myself there was no God at all. That didn't really stick with me, even when I was trying it. But I knew I had no connection. But then God broke in and he ran over to me. When I started the process of coming back saying, I have nothing to offer and I don't really belong here. And he didn't even answer any of that. He just said, hey, you're home. This is wonderful. And sometimes I think that's the only time that God has come to me. But it's not. That's the great part about God. That's the great part about the parental love that God has for us. That's so much better than our own parental love for our own children if we have them. He didn't just come once. He's come to me over and over again. And not to reassure me that I was lost and now I'm found, but he's come to me to say, no, you're still mine. Because do you see some of the things that are happening in these two interactions with these two children? They're both being reminded that they are still children. That they will always be children. There will never be a time when they are not children. I don't know about you, but sometimes I need that reassurance. I didn't need it particularly from my father. I look enough like him that there was no question there. But I need it sometimes from God. I'm not going to speak for anybody else, but I suspect it's a fairly common experience where you find yourself acting in ways that you would find abhorrent in anyone else. When you're being judgmental, when you're being unkind, when you're being stingy rather than generous, whatever it might be, whatever hits you the most, and you just think, I hate it when other people do this, and then you realize, that's me. It's hard to remember that God still loves us then. The great thing is, that whether we remember it or not, he still does. And in some of my worst moments, some of those moments where I look back, and some of them, they still make me physically wince when I think of them now. In some of those, I have had the strongest experience of the love of God. And it doesn't make any sense. Because I think of myself as a parent, and it's really hard for me to be loving to my children when they're being as awful as they can. And I have creative children. Makes for great art. And when they're trying to be awful, they can be pretty awful. Hard for me to be loving then. And so, when God comes to me in the midst of when I'm being as awful as I can be, and I've got more experience in my children, so I can be even more awful than them, have God come and say, I love you, is just an overwhelming experience. Even though I am this older son, a prime and perfect example of this older son, sanctimonious and self-righteous, looking at what I don't have and what I've never received and seeing people who deserve it so much less than me, who have so much more than I do. And God comes and he doesn't even say you're being dumb. Because he comes to me, and in the action, in the act, in the experience of God coming to me, what he says before he says anything is, I love you, you matter. You're my child and you always will be. And then often he says, look at all these things you do have. Sure you don't have that thing. But look at what you have. And he reminds me that I always have him. That I'll always be God's child. That covers a lot. That makes up for a lot of cars I've never had. Larger houses, more money, all those external things that are easy to see and count. And the thing is, I don't have to bang on God's door for him to come out and tell me these things. He comes out before I even think to bang on his door. Because he loves me, just like he loves you. This parable of being lost is easy for us to look only at the younger son as lost, but the older was lost in his own way. And that's the way that we're most likely to be lost. To be lost in the midst of church. Looking at how, oh, we sang that song again. I hate that song. Or that person brought that thing up again. I never want to hear about that. Whatever it might be, there are all these little aggravations that in the midst of church, God comes to us and says, hey, I love you. Did you notice that great thing that other person said? Which child are we? We're both. The examples, writ large as they are in this parable, show us two parts of all of us. The commonality between the two is the Father. And the thing that I keep trying to bring myself back to every time I go to Luke 15, one of my favorite chapters in the Bible, is remember who does the looking, who does the running, who goes to whom. It's always God. He came and found me when I was a complete mess and had no interest in him. He finds me now, when I sometimes forget how much I want to be with God. And he'll do the same for you. It's helpful if we remind ourselves that we have aspects of both of these children. But the most important thing for us to remember is that no matter what, we are God's child, and he comes to us. Amen.